to the MMA Roadshow episode number 15. We are in Las Vegas, but this is not just any week in Las Vegas. This is International Fight Week. It is a special week. I don't care how you look at it, whether you're a fan, whether you're a journalist, whether you don't even know what you're doing here. This is a special week, and I am here with Simon Head from London. He has made his way in from blustery England to the desert. We are actually, to set the scene a little bit, we are sitting in my hotel room. Now, I live here in Las Vegas, but USA Today is having a sports conference, and so they were forced to book a certain number of hotel rooms, and they said, listen, John, if you want to book a room so that you can just stay down there, you can do that. And, of course, Simon, I jumped on it, and thankfully I did, because we are having a nice ice-cold Pabst Blue Ribbon. I'm sure your first experience with Pabst Blue Ribbon. And we are overlooking the pool here at Mandalay Bay. You can see the mountains in the background. Not a bad view to do a podcast.
It's idyllic. A cold beer. The weather's beautiful. Lovely view. It's great to be here. My first ever visit to the U.S. So not a bad way to kick things off.
Not bad at all. So I wanted to talk about the International Fight Week. So I thought let's have some international media. First of all, let's talk about where you work, because some of our listeners, of course, probably won't be familiar with you. You work for The Sun.
Yeah.
A London-based tabloid, right?
I mean,
it's a tabloid.
It is. It's the most read newspaper in England, and it's quite famous for its headlines and for being a very sort of out there sort of paper.
It's
very
provocative.
It's provocative, but one of the things it prides itself on is its sports coverage, and they've recently signed a deal with the UFC, so we are now effectively media partners with the UFC back in England. So we, through my coverage in the newspaper and online, we break a lot of exclusives on the European side, bout announcements, and all that sort of thing. So it's going all right. So we've got a column in the paper every Monday, and we've got a subscription based website which I run on a daily basis with all the breaking news and bits and pieces on there.
And some people won't know what a media partner means, but when you write that, it's privileged status, to be honest with you. It's kind of like, for instance, Globo in Brazil is an actual broadcast partner. They get, you'll always see Globo gets treated very well, not only at Brazilian events, but in any fight that they cover. You get that same type of access. I mean, if you want the one-on-ones with somebody, they're going to give it to you. If you want something special behind the scenes, they're going to give it to you. And the other thing that I always try to tip off to people is, like, listen, if you see a report that comes up with an official UFC partner about agreement, an injury change or whatever, don't feel like you need to, well, let me wait for a second source, or let me wait for MMA Junkie to confirm that, which I do appreciate when people do say, hey, I want to wait till Junkie confirms that. But when you're talking about an official media partner like that, you're talking about people that have direct relationships with the UFC's PR team, with the UFC's employees as a whole. And so bottom line is, I'm just telling you people, if Simon Head comes out with a report, you can verify, you can know right away that you have spoken with UFC officials to make this report. You're not just, I heard from a guy in a gym.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously there'll be opinion pieces that I chuck out there as well, but hopefully there'll be clearly enough mark that you'll be able to tell the difference between what's an official sort of hard news story and what is me just sort of spouting forth and offering my own opinion.
No doubt.
The quality between the two will probably be quite noticeable, I would think.
Why was The Sun interested in, obviously you're not running the place or anything like that, but why was The Sun interested in covering MMA? Because it was the Daily Telegraph was a huge cover, huge. They were a partner for a while,
that was
a big part. Why do you think The Sun wanted to jump in this? Help me understand.
Well, I think it's kind of a two-way street. I think from a coverage point of view, the UFC, especially in England, they're still trying to break into the mainstream. Obviously, the UFC have been running shows in the UK for a long time now, but we still haven't got to that breakthrough point, I don't think. I think the market, I think, is there, but I think the media haven't quite sort of come up to the same level to match that demand. So there's still a little bit of growth, a little bit of development still to be done. So the UFC have obviously looked to their demographic in the UK and identified The Sun as the ideal partner to try and get their message out there and to just bring the sport to a bigger audience. Obviously, they've got a television deal with BT Sport, which is obviously doing good things on that side of things. But from a media and newspaper perspective in particular, it's the most read paper in the country. The demographic fits perfectly. It seemed like an ideal fit. From The Sun's point of view, the way The Sun works is, obviously, they've got the newspaper and they want to shift papers. but also the way that the business works online. It works on a subscription model. So they are constantly looking for new verticals, new markets where they can add things. So for example, one of the major things that they offer to subscribers is Premier League goal clips, as an example. It's a hugely popular service. So when a goal goes in the Premier League, within a couple of minutes of that goal actually going in, if you're a subscriber, you can watch it on your phone.
Wow.
So they've got that sort of thing. They've got a similar thing with the Aviva Premiership Rugby. There's various other areas that they're looking to move into as well. And another one that they're now moving into is the UFC with myself.
Nice. Help me understand BT Sport as a provider. I've been over to England a couple times, but you know, I stay with some friends sometimes. I stay with hotels, but I don't know how the TV works and what they've got and what they subscribe to. BT Sport, what's the reach like? Is it a premium channel? So what do UFC fans in England have to do so that we can understand?
Yeah, well, it's quite useful this because I came from BT Sport to join the Sun, so I worked there from the launch of the channel. And I looked after their digital UFC coverage when I was there. So I've got sort of a good inside sort of look on how it all works. In terms of how the channel works within the overall sort of UK market, what you've got what are called terrestrial TV channels. Back in the olden days, we used to have four channels. You just have four buttons on the TV. BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, Channel 4. Then there was another one, Channel 5, and then digital television or satellite TV came in. And then that became digital television, and now we've got a plethora of channels. In terms of sport, you've got basically two or three different providers of sports channels. You've got Sky, who are the big sort of behemoth. They're the same company owned by that owns Fox. So Sky Sports in England is our equivalent to Fox Sports over here. BT is a brand new channel that's been developed by British Telecom, who manage all of the telephony, all of the landlines, all the broadband lines, all of that sort of stuff. They own the infrastructure across the whole of the UK. They're now branching out. The big thing that they're looking to do is get what's called the triple play. So they want people to have their telephone with BT. They want people to have their broadband with BT. And now they want people to have digital television with BT. And they're fighting directly with Sky for this market. And there's actually three competitors. There's Virgin as well. But they tend to act as a bit of a reseller. So basically, they're in direct competition with Sky. So the bidding war for Premier League rights is ridiculous.
Right.
BT recently acquired rights for Champions League football, or soccer as you call it over here, for not far short of €1 billion.
Wow.
So we're talking some major cash. So Sky, which had that from day one, pretty much. They don't have it anymore.
That's got to be a huge blow to them.
So, well, it is. Well, if you talk to them, they say it won't, but they're kind of styling that out a bit. But in terms of UFC, sort of bringing that into UFC, so the rights that BT has to the UFC, anything that's shown on US television, whether that be on free TV or pay-per-view, a BT Sports subscriber will get all of those events as part of their package. So there's no pay-per-view as such. You pay a monthly subscription.
How much is the monthly subscription?
This is the thing. If you've got British Telecom broadband, if you've got BT broadband, you get BT Sport for free.
Wow.
That's the kicker, right? So that's how they've helped launch this and get the customers. If you've got Sky, you can buy BT as a bolt-on. It's like £15 a month or £18 a month for HD. If you've got Virgin Media, which I've got, then they basically acquire the channels off the providers and package them in these big bundles. So I've got this bundle that's got all the BT Sport channels. I haven't got any Sky channels because I haven't got enough money to pay for it, to be honest with you. So basically the way it works is you're either paying nothing or you're paying up to £18 a month.
Which is right now about 27 US or so.
Yeah, but you're getting everything that you guys get.
I was about to say, still better than us. You don't have to pay pay-per-view.
Exactly, and people in the UK do complain that sometimes. I mean, there's a bit of confusion over the Glasgow event, because the Glasgow event is being shown over here in the US. It's being shown, to my understanding, quite early in the day.
Right.
Now in the UK, there's a rule called the watershed, which basically means you can't show content that is inappropriate to children after a certain time. I think it's 9 o'clock. So, and you have to transition gradually into that. So anything that's got strong violence, strong language, adult themes, you have to ease your way in gently to it. And also, it has to be after a certain time. And there are kind of caveats and little rules around it. But basically what it means is the BT aren't, well, what they're doing, they're showing it live, but via their BT Sport app, which is great if you're a BT, if you actually have a BT subscription, because you get the app. But if you bought it through Sky, you don't have the app. If you bought it through Virgin Media, you don't have the app. So there's a lot of people who are a bit disappointed, and understandably so, that they're going to... A, they can't watch it on their TV, and it'll probably be blacked out on Fight Pass because BT have the rights. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. Hmm. It's all your guys' fault for wanting it on Fox. But yeah, it's something that... There's definitely things that can be improved and ironed out, and... I think the rights deal are up is up for renegotiation. I think middle of next year. I think it's August it expires. So it'd be interesting to see what happens, because a few of the events that didn't get that weren't included within those packages. So for example, Poland was one. That was a Fight Pass only event, and there's a couple of others. I think it was an Australian fight night that was in that bracket as well. They they're picked up by a channel called Pick. And Pick is a Sky-owned free-to-air channel that they've used in the past to trial shows to go onto their pay platforms, and also to showcase some of the stuff that they've already got. So it's interesting, you know, they're testing the waters. I think to what degree, we'll wait and see. But it's interesting. It's something that there's still, and the UK market in general is still a developing market for sure.
Yeah, see, Nick, I appreciate that, and that's one reason I wanted, you know, International Fight Week. Let's get some international media, and let's understand, you know, what's going on, because obviously we didn't get to go to England this year, so we haven't gotten to see the UK market recently, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But let's talk UFC 189 right now, because that's the big show that's on the horizon right now. I wanted to speak to a European-based media member, and I thought England was a good place to start, about Conor McGregor. If I had brought an Irish media member in here and asked him, I know what I'd hear, that Conor McGregor walks on water, you know, that Conor McGregor invented the sport of mixed martial arts, all these things. And not that he isn't a fantastic talent, but obviously he's damn near a deity to those guys. Help me understand what Conor McGregor means in England. I mean, he is becoming very recognizable here. I think I'm a little bit skewed because, I mean, he's based here in Vegas, so he's getting a lot of coverage. Obviously, the event is here in Vegas. But as you, a European-based journalist, a UK-based journalist, how big is Conor McGregor in England?
He's big. He's big. In terms of mainstream, he's not that big yet. Is the truth. If you know the sport of MMA, then you will obviously know Conor McGregor. He's the biggest star to come out of our part of the world, for sure. Obviously, we've had Michael Bisping flying the flag for the UK, and he's done a great job in doing that. And, you know, a lot of the successes that the UFC have had in our part of the world has been largely down to the successes of Michael Bisping, sure, and his ability to sell events and put himself out there to the media. I mean, he's an absolute pro at it. Conor McGregor is another guy who knows how to publicise himself and knows how to publicise the sport. He's got his own way of doing things. And I think...
So can he build the entire market? I mean, can Englishmen root for an Irishman?
I think they can, and I think most probably are, to be honest. You know, the nearest equivalent I can think of is Prince Nassim Hamed. Now, when people watched him, it was kind of a 50-50 split back in the day. Some people loved him and tuned in to just watch him fight because he was a technician, but a very unorthodox one, and he was spectacular. And he always had something interesting to say. You know, you didn't get a boring interview out of him. Same thing with Conor McGregor. But you also had the other people who tuned him to watch him get his lights turned out.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, when he fought Marco Antonio Barrera, you know, he eventually got found out. But yeah, I think it's a similar thing with McGregor. He polarizes to a degree, but I think certainly at the moment the groundswell of support is definitely with McGregor. People love him. His appearance on BT Sport, that legendary exchange with Chad Mendes with the whole balls on the forehead, that clip has done 1.2 million views on YouTube.
Wow.
To give you an idea of the pickup around UFC 189, I was having lunch with a former colleague of mine at BT who looks after all the social stuff, or at least he did. And he rebranded the video to make it 189 relevant.
Right.
And when he did that, I think it had like 700,000 or something like that, or 750,000 views. So he's picked up around about 500,000 views in that space, in the space of probably about maybe 3-4 weeks or so. So, you know, everybody wants to watch Conor McGregor. Everybody wants to see just how good he is. There are question marks over him. And they're not question marks that he's had any say over. It's just people judging him. And those question marks, especially now with the change of opponent, I think we're gonna find out a lot more about Conor McGregor. And early next week, you know, we'll either be saying, okay, this guy is absolutely the real deal, or, you know, there'll be a lot of people saying, I told you so.
You know, you touched on it, and it was kind of where I wanted to ask you next. I think from a fight fan's point of view, especially somebody that's breaking down fights, this fight is almost more intriguing. I mean, the Jose Aldo fight, with all the build-up and everything that was around it and all the marketing and the world tour and all those things, I mean, I think we were all very much looking forward to it. But it wasn't going to answer the questions that we had. It was just, can he beat Jose Aldo? We're still going to say, but can he beat a wrestler? Can he deal with this type of opponent? So I completely agree with you from that point of view. But what about from the fan perspective over there? Has this fight lost any matchup? I saw Dana White did an interview that said, you know, they've actually sold more tickets since the matchup. And they've, you know, and obviously he's promoting, you know, not saying Dana White is lying, but Dana White, it's his job to put a nice spin on things. And that's what a promoter does. He's a carnival barker. But what about from your point of view as far as the English fans and what you've seen online, whether it be commenters or discussions that you've had or anything like that, has this taken a hit from their point of view, or are they still intrigued?
I think it's taken a hit. I think it would be naive to suggest it hasn't. Because of the amount of investment that went into building this fight, people who were interested from day one, they were even more interested by the end of it. But there were an awful lot of people who got picked up along the way. You know, that world tour grabbed people by the scruff of the neck. It was like, you know, this is, to start with, it was a champion that everybody respected and knew was one of the UFC's greats against a guy who a lot of people were just branding as a loudmouth who'd been gifted a title shot and had been elevated above his ability. By the end of the world tour, there wasn't so much of that being said. It's, okay, this is a legitimate contest. This is and not only that, this is a fight. We you know, I want to see this fight. Because as soon as you make things personal, as soon as you get into the psyche of the two guys involved and you see how they interact with each other, you can't help but become emotionally invested one way or another. And the second you become emotionally invested, that's when the sport's got you. And if you've got two guys there and you don't know who they are, you don't know where they've come from, and all you've got are records on a piece of paper, you could probably sit and watch it and enjoy the sport of it. But if you knew the backstories and you knew that they've been going at each other sort of tooth and nail throughout the 8-stop or 9-stop media tour, and it all culminated in this absolutely crazy, crazy scene in Dublin, all of a sudden, you know, wow, I didn't know these sorts of things happened in professional sport. This looks staged, but it really wasn't. It just looked, it was more pro wrestling. It looked pro wrestling, but it was anything but. It was absolutely real, and it was a masterpiece of salesmanship as well in terms of the staging and the way it was done. Now that Aldo's out, then obviously there's that initial disappointment. The guy's out, but it was softened to a degree by the fact that I think people saw it coming once the news got out, and the way the news got out as well. You know, as you've said on this podcast, news like that doesn't normally get out of a training camp unless you want it to. So it's hard to not be a little bit cynical about it. And the question then is, okay, why? Did he want out of the fight then? Because he could have just pulled out of the fight. Was there a money issue involved there? He wanted to do some sort of negotiation to somehow protect himself so he didn't end up losing cash through it. Or, I don't know, was it some masterpiece of gamesmanship? Was he actually 100% fit?
Really starting to think what it boiled down to was, I think he knew that the UFC was going to try to force his hand to stay in there and fight. And he's like, if I get this
preempting thing, it.
Yeah. I think he was preempting the UFC's pressure. That's again, it's just a guess. I haven't talked to anybody, and I would like to pull Anahisa aside a little bit this week now that she's not on vacation anymore and talk to her a little bit. I didn't get a chance to do that today, but I would like to know. But I do think Again, it's just a, it's just speculation. It's it's just a theory, but I think he was trying to preempt their pressure a little bit.
I think so. And it's interesting Dana's reaction afterwards, where obviously he was disappointed, and he certainly didn't make a lot of effort to hide that. But the thing that I found particularly interesting was that he dropped in that thing about Aldo having pulled out five title fights. That's not a stat that I'd ever heard up until that point.
Yeah.
But you look back, and actually, you know, it kind of stacks up. So you think, okay, so he's clearly not impressed with this. And it also, by doing that, it then lays the groundwork for the interim. Because when I was talking about it with someone before Aldo pulled out the fight, I'm like, the problem with it is they want McGregor fighting for a title. This is what they've built it up to. If Aldo pulls out, they can't put an interim title bout on, because, you know, it's a rib injury. It's it's 6 to 12 weeks. That's not a
but
you know,
when you show a history of issues,
right?
Now
so
you
can
say, well,
exactly.
We don't know if he's coming back.
Exactly. So I think, in terms of the way the UFC have handled it, the way they prepared for it, they have covered all their bases very, very professionally and very well. They didn't want another UFC 151 to happen. I mean, I don't think there was any danger of the event being cancelled. Let's get that right. This is a stellar card we've got this weekend. So if the fight had completely gone off the card, we've still got an unbelievable main event in terms of Robbie Lawler versus Rory McDonald. But the fight that everybody was buying tickets for, the fight that everyone was buying plane tickets for, was Conor McGregor versus whoever, Jose Aldo. He could be fighting the bin man. It doesn't matter, right? If he's fighting the bin man for a belt, then it doesn't matter. Half of Ireland's going to turn up. I think half of them are already here, to be honest. It'd be a good weekend to be a burglar in Ireland, I tell you, because most of them are going to be here. But just very quickly on Mendes, I think a lot of people are now coming round to the thought that this is from a stylistic point of view, from a question answering point of view, this is probably a bigger test of Conor McGregor than Jose Aldo. Against Jose Aldo, he's against a guy whose style is reasonably easy to predict. You know, Aldo doesn't do that many things out of the ordinary. He's technically excellent, but he's very compact in the way he goes about things. He's not that wild. Chad Mendes fights in a different style, and also he has that X factor, which is the wrestling. And that's the big knock on Conor McGregor, is he hasn't fought a decorated wrestler before. On top of that, he's doing it on 2 weeks' notice. People are saying, can Chad come in at 2 weeks' notice? I think it's arguably as difficult for McGregor. I know the SBG guys, and I talked to Gunnar Nelson about his fight last week, and he said, we all don't prepare for fighters, we prepare for fights. And we train to improve ourselves and our own skills to cope with whatever situation we encounter, so that when something happens, we have an answer to it when it comes. Rather than saying, these are the predetermined outcomes we're going to prepare for, because we know this is what person A does, but don't prepare for all these myriad other options, because they don't expect them to happen. So they're basically casting the net completely as open as they can, and they're just preparing for everything. So from that point of view, McGregor's saying, it's fine, they're just interchangeable heads, it's okay. But it's a different proposition. And I think it's a fascinating fight. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think it's huge. I think people are... I think it's going to be a great fight, one way or the other, and we're going to get some questions answered. You mentioned Gunnar Nelson. I want a quick hit on some other Europeans real quick. Gunnar Nelson... I want to get your take on him. Obviously, he's so quiet. Tough for the UFC to market the guy. I know he's a huge star. Apparently, everybody knows who he is in his native country. Not many people in that native country to get to know you anyway. Coming off the first loss of his career in a difficult fight, certainly in this fight. But give me just the – I mean, does England know who Gunnar Nelson is? Is he a guy that can help forward European MMA, or is he just so quiet that people just don't get him?
I think he's almost an honorary Irishman. I think, and actually, if you listen very carefully to him when he talks, there is a slight Irish lilt to his accent, ever so slightly. He is, to all intents and purposes, like an extended member of the Irish,
sure,
the Irish fight family that comes out of that SBG gym. you know, as you say, he's one of these guys that there are certain people in sport who make their own noise by just doing what they do, and that's their USP, and that's kind of that's Gunny Nelson. He doesn't go shouting from the rooftops.
Right.
He won't go calling people out and all the rest of it. He just turns up, walks in, completely deadpan, and fights and tests himself. And it looks to me, it's almost like he's competing with himself. He's very introverted, and he seems to be, you know, he's constantly striving to improve himself. And, you know, against Brandon Thatch, he's in there with a guy who is going to give him all the heat he can handle. I think it's going to be really interesting. He's going to be fighting a guy who's significantly bigger than him. I walked past Brandon Thatch this morning.
The guy, massive.
He's huge. He's absolutely huge. But,
phone's ringing in the hotel. Yeah. Cold coffee's over here.
Yeah.
This is what we do, Simon. We just hang out and do our thing. But yeah, cold coffee's over here. I don't know what's going on. We might have the police walking in here.
All right.
Security thought the door was open. All right.
Someone's taken too much ice out of the ice machine.
We did. Yeah, we did.
You
take
have
a lot
no
of
idea.
Ice down our cold beers in the double sink.
Three men carrying 3 gallons of ice down the corridor in the Mandalay Bay. But we have to keep the beer cold. That's how it works. But back to Gunny Nelson. Yeah, I mean, he's fighting Brandon Thatch. Thatch is an absolute monster, and he's going to be fired up after that loss to Benson Henderson.
Yep.
And a lot of people are saying if Henderson can submit Thatch, then Gunny Nelson can submit Thatch. Gunny Nelson is a guy who I believe has submitted Jeff Monson in combat grappling.
Right.
So this is a guy who knows his way around on the mat. He's an absolute wizard. The question is, over a 3-round fight, and this is the problem with if it was old school, no time limits, I think Gunny Nelson would be right up there in the top 2 or 3 in the world, because he would eventually find a way to beat you.
Right.
Against Rick Story, he ran out of time.
Yep.
He didn't find the answer to the puzzle in the 15 minutes. And the problem will be, again, how he deals with the first couple of rounds against Thatch. Because if he starts slow, and you can bet Thatch won't, then you could find himself down on the cards and trying to chase something in the last round. It didn't happen for him against Rick Story. He's in danger of that happening again unless he really goes at it from the gate.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not his style, though. That's the thing. It's very interesting to see how he goes about it.
Hopefully that's something that'll have to be a wake-up call for him. Brad Pickett, very difficult fight for Brad Pickett here. Obviously, the odds are hugely against him. The biggest question I have is Reebok going to let him wear his gear? Do you have any insight on the information? Is he going to get the keep? Because I've heard that like Cowboy Cerrone is going to get to wear his cowboy hat.
It's like a concession, isn't it? See, as soon as the Reebok deal was announced, there was a conference call for it. And I asked the question on the conference call. I said, it was Dana and Lorenzo were on the conference call. And I said, how does this affect someone like Brad Pickett? I actually said about Brad Pickett, I said, because I'd interviewed Brad earlier in the day about it. And I said, what's the deal? Are you going to be allowed to wear like a Reebok branded trilby or something? And he said, I've got no idea. But the thing is, this is a guy who's never worn a sponsored T-shirt to the Octagon in his career.
Right.
He's had his own One Punch branded T-shirts for the verdict at the end.
Yeah, it's always just the white T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, but it's never been sponsored. And yeah. I think it's a tribute. It's either his grandfather or his great-grandfather was an old bare-knuckle boxer, and it's a tribute to him.
Very cool.
So he wears the trilby, the vest, the braces, and the baggy tweed shorts.
Yeah.
And he walks out to Chaz and Dave, which I'm sure the American market hasn't quite got their heads around.
It is
as quintessentially British and as quintessentially London as you can get. They are legendary back home. And he walks out to Chaz and Dave, and he's got all of the old school get up on. And the worry is that he won't have any of that. I'm expecting him to walk out in Reebok shorts, Reebok T-shirt, and his hat. I think they'll
that'll be a shame, man.
I think this is the thing. This is the thing. I mean, it's the individuality is the big thing that is being pushed aside for this deal. There are lots of positives to this deal that I think you will eventually see over 5, 10, 15 years, because it just helps lift the professionalism of the sport in the eyes of future partners and future sponsors and all the rest of it. And if you've got Reebok on the shorts and you've not got dude wipes on the shorts and stuff like that, then you know, and also from a from a casual fan's perspective as well, it just makes it look a lot more professional.
I agree. No, I think there's definitely some positives of it. Cold coffee. Can we get another round of cold beers, man? Well, I mean, producing on the side there. All right. Last thing I got for you. Well, two last things. Help me understand. I'll see you again next week. It won't be long. We'll hang out this week. I'll see you again in Scotland next week.
Yes, definitely.
What can we expect out of the market, do you think? And feel free to open your cold beer there, man.
I will do.
I mean, talk to me about Michael Bisping. I mean, is he still, as you said earlier, I mean, the UK market has kind of ebbed and flowed with his career. Is he still kind of the leader of that UK market? I mean, he lives here now. He does. You know,
he doesn't want to.
Really?
He doesn't want to.
Does he do it just for training? Or?
No, he does it because he kind of has to now.
Is that his wife?
I did a really nice sit-down interview with him, which we're breaking up into bits, and that's something that people who've got subscription to The Sun will be able to see. I'm going to put a few little snippets out on social, on Twitter, so you'll be able to see them.
That's at Simon Head. That's where it'll be
at. Simon Head, yeah. One of the things, he lives in Orange County.
Right.
And he's got access to training partners, he's got the weather and all the rest of it. But he wants to come home. He wants to live in England. I think he wants to live in London, even though he's from originally from Clitheroe, which is a northern town up in Lancashire. He's billed as being from Manchester because internationally people know where that is and it's near enough. So he wants to come back and live in London. His wife is Australian and doesn't like the weather in England. His two kids are completely integrated with life in California. They're in school. They're doing really well. So he's got roots down. And he still feels like a little bit out of place. Huh. And as I say, I'll put that that video out in the next couple of days so it can tie in with this podcast coming out. So if you check my Twitter feed, hopefully it will tie in and you'll see it. But yeah, you know, he misses England. He misses England. So he's not going to be fighting in England this weekend after next. He's going to be in Glasgow, which is good enough for him. It's close enough for him. there's a big rivalry between England and Scotland, but he assures me that he's going to get a fantastic welcome. He's done signings and stuff up there, and they've been queuing around the block to meet him. And
I mean, if it's still cheer for an Englishman or cheer for a Brazilian, right?
Well, that's the thing. Well, yeah, in Scotland. I'm not exaggerating to say that. Okay, if it was,
they would cheer for the Brazilian just because they hate England that much.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty.
And
much.
I don't say that. I don't say that from a bitter way. That's just the way things are. England and Scotland have got a very competitive relationship,
right.
And but in terms of MMA, I think it's kind of transcended borders a little bit. And someone like Bisping, he's such a big personality, and it's been less about England. It's been about Britain. So it's been more inclusive in that regard. And he's not known as an English fighter. He tends to be discussed as a British fighter. So that's good. However, Scotland fighters are very much, they're Scottish fighters. You know what I mean? And rightly so. They're very proud of their heritage, and they need to push those guys. And they've got three really talented fighters on the bill in a week or so's time. But Bisping, this is his last run, I think. Yeah. He's in that position now where he's in his mid to late 30s. He's been up to within an ace of actually getting a title shot and has just missed out. And almost all of those fights have come against guys who have subsequently, basically those losses have asterisks next to them. TRT, human growth hormone.
Yeah, man.
And also with the Sonnen fight, it was an iffy decision, in my opinion. And in Sonnen's opinion and in Bisping's opinion, everybody I know scored that fight to Bisping, except for the three judges who gave it to Sonnen. But he was also on the go-go juice at the time as well. So, you know, so the big question is, can he push himself up there again? And it's a big ask for him, because if you look who's right at the top, you know, he had that fight with Rockhold. It didn't go his way. He needs to build himself up again. This is probably the start of a final run. Can he beat Talis Latis? Yes, I think he can. I think he can. I think he will as well.
Yeah, tough, man. The people at the very top of that middleweight division right now are just absolute beasts. It's going to be a tough run for him. Let's get your last insight. Are we going to be back in London in 2016? I mean, this used to be an annual destination.
I'm hopeful, yeah.
I didn't get to go this year.
Yeah, it was just one of those things. Sometimes, you know, with the reshuffle and all the rest of it, sometimes things miss out. And we've had we've got an event in Glasgow. We've got an event in Dublin coming up October 24th.
Right.
So there's two localish.
I already got my flight booked.
Shows,
way.
Have you?
Oh,
excellent.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
I've already got the hotel booked. Actually, I've already got the hotel booked, so I'm all sorted as well. But London. I'd like to think early next year we'll see something. The big question mark, and it's something that it's kind of an unspoken thing at the moment. We don't know who's running the show.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. You got any insight on?
No,
is
the show
what
answer.
Happened with Dave and
no.
D, who's going to run? I mean, that was very abrupt.
It was,
and we're
incredibly
talking about Dave
abrupt.
Allen, who was an Irishman and was in charge. He took over for Gary Cook. He had worked with Gary Cook for a long time. They'd worked together at I know at the Nike company.
The
I don't
Nike,
know if they
yeah.
had worked anywhere before together, but I know they worked there. Kind of came over, I don't want to say as a package deal, but certainly recommended, and then kind of abruptly left.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was told it was personal reasons and that they were respecting his privacy. So when you hear personal reasons, that could be anything.
Right.
Right, it could be professional, personal reasons, or it could be personal. You just don't know. But when they say we're respecting his privacy, it makes you think that it might be something that isn't necessarily professional. And you just hope that if it is something that's sort of away from the work sphere, that whatever it is, that, you know, things can be dealt with and turn out okay for him. Because he was a very popular guy among the media, for sure.
Yeah.
And he was very open. He was a very genial character. And he was very inclusive in terms of the way that he ran the ship. I just hope that whoever they do bring in, and I've got absolutely no clue who they're going to bring in, but whoever they do bring in, I'd like to think that they'd have a similar ethos and just kind of carry things on. And also, just with the London thing, hopefully that won't have any knock-on effect on London. Because London is still a big show for them. It's a big arena as well.
Yeah,
so,
the O2
you know,
is massive.
You
beautiful. Could,
if they want to hold a big, you know, they've got Stockholm. They've shown that they can do a big show in Stockholm. The other big arena they can do is the O2, and you know, it might be a case of them having to get the pieces in place to have a big blockbuster event. And whether we see pay-per-views over in Europe in the next year or so, that'd be interesting as well. Conor McGregor may dictate that.
Conor McGregor could do it. Hey, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, man, she needs to keep going too. She's
unbelievable.
Awesome. It sounds like, by the way, Joe Carr is going to be running things. I don't know if he'll be there next week, probably.
Yeah.
In Scotland, Joe Carr kind of did the same thing in Asia. He ran Asia for a little while,
right,
and then set up somebody to take over. So I don't think he'll be there on a permanent basis by any stretch. He's a great guy. Obviously, I don't think most fans would know who he is, but behind the scenes, he does a lot of good work for the UFC and is really good kind of in that leadership role and kind of helping get things set up for a new regime. So, listen, it's we're overlooking the beautiful sunset going down here. There's too much going on in your first trip to the United States, first trip to Vegas. There's way too much to do for us to be sitting here in this hotel room much longer. So I'm going to wrap up things and let you get out of here, and we'll go find ourselves some trouble somewhere on the Las Vegas Strip. But I want to thank you very much for helping me kick off International Fight Week, giving us all the insight from the European-based market. Again, at Simon Head, we said on the Twitter got your own podcast as well.
I have very baby steps we're taking, but it's called the Championship Rounds. Again, I shamelessly plug that through Twitter. So if you follow my Twitter, I'll just shamelessly plug anything. So keep an ear out for that as well if you can. It's me and another guy called Ralph Welch, who writes some stuff for UFC.com back in England. He's a good lad, and we normally just go back and forth, talk over the big events of the week. So it's good. And thanks for inviting me on. I do regret that horrible alcoholism-related review I wrote for you the other day, but it's fine.
Well, that was you, huh? Bastard.
I'll take that off. Wasn't really, but I thought I mentioned it. I thought that was priceless. I don't know who wrote that, but that was priceless.
That was pretty good. I don't know what the hell they're talking about, but I'm going to go ahead and finish this beer and get another one, and we're going to go on and enjoy the Las Vegas night. So thanks, Simon. Appreciate the time, brother.
Cheers.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. We're doing something a little bit different here. I swore I wasn't going to have an Irishman on to talk about Conor McGregor, because I pretty much already know what's going to be said. But I broke down because I like my man Neil McGrath. He's a good man. TalkingBrawlsMMA.com. And we're doing something a little bit different here. I believe I haven't heard a lot of podcasts recorded right from press row of a live fight.
Yeah.
But I figure what better way to do that? We're here at Invicta FC 13, taking in the fights. We've got a nice front row seat here. We've got Invicta FC star Alexa Grasso sitting right in front of us. I'm looking over here. It's a who's who over here.
Tito floating around.
Everyone. There's Frankie Edgar over there. Joanna Janjacek. UFC officials everywhere, so not a bad scene.
Yeah, it's great, man. Just a little bit disappointing, obviously, from an Irish point of view with Catherine coming up short there.
Yeah.
You know, be a good learning curve for her, good experience to get in the US, but obviously she's going to be very disappointed. Speaking to her yesterday, she had very high hopes going in, but, you know, you live, you learn, as they say.
Yeah, it was a big opportunity for sure, and obviously this is a big you know, Irish contingent here and all those things. Imagine she was kind of broken that didn't get it done.
Yeah, I think so, mate. But as I said there, you know, you come out, you fight in the big ship, one of the biggest women's shows in the world, and you know it's going to be a good learning curve for her. She'll definitely take something from this, and she'll be back. Make no bones about it. She's that type of competitor and that type of attitude.
Well, we're taping this on Thursday night. It'll come out Friday morning. Obviously, it's been a busy week already. There's so much more going on tomorrow. The Expo kicks off. But, I mean, obviously, the big story here is Conor McGregor.
Of course.
It's what everybody's looking forward to. Even with two fight cards still to come with UFC, with Invicta, with the Expo, what everybody's here for is Conor McGregor. Help me understand from an Irish perspective. Obviously, I got a chance to see it firsthand and just how nutty it is. But help me understand from an Irish perspective, how big is Conor in Ireland?
It's crazy, mate. 2 years on the bounce, be the most Googled Irish person, which is incredible. Ahead of the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, you know, one of our biggest rugby stars, Rory McIlroy, one of the biggest golfers in the world. It's just insane. People may not know what the UFC is or mixed martial arts is, but they know what Conor McGregor is. That's how you put it. It's unbelievable. He's been on the Late Late Show as well, which is Ireland's premier late night talk show, 4 times in one season. So that just puts you on a level. I don't think anyone else has ever been on more than 3 times, and Conor's been on 4. So it's, you know, the guy is just an absolute phenomenon in Ireland. The guy can't walk down the street anymore without being absolutely mobbed. And you saw the Irish guys over here. We're like rats. We sort of infested in Las Vegas, I like to say. But, you know, a massive fight to look forward to on Saturday night. Not the fight we may have wanted. You know, we all wanted to see, but it's going to be a test, and we're going to get a lot of answers. We know the wrestling element as well. So that's, you know, it's going to be questions answered. Oh, some action going on here.
Yeah, right. Here's a big action. Wow. We're in the first of 3 championship fights. And right now, it looks like Erica Tiburcio is trying to sink in the choke here. Top position. A lot of excitement around us. It's good stuff. Yeah. 3 championship fights. I'm most excited for the Cyborg fight, of course. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch Cyborg fight live.
Awesome.
It's pretty impressive.
First time, yeah. Got to see her yesterday. She's looking big and sharp, so I'm sure she'll have those guns out ready to go later on.
We'll talk about Conor's fight a little bit in specific in just a minute, but I want to ask you, knowing now that he is this huge star, legitimate massive star, what is it that people like about him? Because, I mean, I just wonder, too. I mean, he does have a slight air of arrogance as well, and I do wonder, you know, is there some people maybe that are even turned off by his attitude a little bit, or does everybody in Ireland just love the guy? And if so, why is that?
He's just, I think Conor's always had an aura about him. It's just even back from when he was in Cage Warriors, and you know, he had 200 followers on Twitter, you know, before when you look back to the Mike Hill fight, things like that. He's never changed, you know, in an interview. He's always been the same guy. I remember we spoke to him maybe 3 years ago, and he goes, you know, I look at myself in the mirror every day and I see, you know, a gold crown on my head, that sort of thing that Conor goes on about. But the aura, I just think people are radiated to him, but everyone doesn't love him. That's, you know, I know a lot of guys that just can't stand him, his
really?
Arrogant splash. That's, you either love or hate Conor. I think he's one of those sort of characters.
That's interesting. I wonder, because I think that's definitely the case too in the United States, and I just wondered if that was the case in Ireland. It is a love-hate thing.
Yeah, I think so, because you know, I've many friends at home, and you know, you get the odd text message, oh god, man, get this guy off the TV, you know. I'm sick of hearing about him. It's that sort of thing, you know. I think there's a lot of begrudgers out there as well. You know, it's just a waste
just
of life.
When you're famous, you're gonna have haters, right?
That's it, man. That's it. But a very interesting character. But he, you know, he does. He radiates. He's this ooze of arrogance, as you said, about him, which I think is what, you know, people are attracted to. But a superstar, an absolute superstar.
It's funny, you know. Again, and you know, there's a lot of great fights on this card, and we've talked about it all week. But I mean, it really is being overshadowed. I think right now, I would say Conor McGregor. Yeah. I would still say Ronda Rousey is a bigger star. But I would honestly say Conor McGregor, to me, is the second biggest star in the UFC right now.
Oh, 100% agree, yeah. And if you know, bar Ronda, really, and Conor, you know, on a mainstream level, There's not really anyone else in the UFC that's, you know, getting the exposure that they're getting. We've seen Conor and Conan O'Brien show last week.
Did a fine job, great job
as well. So that's the type of level Conor's on. That's the superstardom he's reached at the moment, which is truly incredible considering he's only been in the UFC a couple of years. It's been a momentous rise.
He's bypassed a lot of people.
Yeah, oh man, you know, the guy is just he's a checkbook at the moment, really.
We hear about the 2,500 or so tickets, I think is what people are saying, that were sold directly to Ireland. Help me understand, what kind of people are buying those tickets, and what kind of sacrifices is it? Because I don't really know much about the Irish economy. I'll admit, I don't know what the exchange rate is right now. So for people to make the trip over here to Las Vegas, what kind of sacrifices is that?
It's once in a lifetime, you know, trip, that sort of thing. I know, you know, of guys coming over that wouldn't be the hardest of core MMA fans, but you know, that's what we get back to. We were talking about a minute ago. Conor's just such a superstar in Ireland. But people are making huge financial sacrifices to get over to Vegas. The economy, the currency isn't going too strong against the dollar at the moment. It's nearly actually on an even level par, which is just shows even from last year how much it's dropped and changed. But it is. It's economically, I don't think anyone, Dave Schaller said, has really, you know, looked for refunds of tickets from Ireland for the 2,500. So that just proves to you, we are what Conor says is quite true at times. You know, one of us goes to war, all of us goes to war. That's how the fans look at it. You know, World Cups, Rugby World Cups.
Right.
We travel in our droves. Ryder Cups, anything you want. MMA is no different. But, you know, you have to take consideration as well. It's not just people from Ireland will be coming. There's going to be hundreds, I think, coming from Canada. You know, you've students on their J-1 visas in California, New York. They're all going to make the trip over too.
Right.
And it just again, reiterates, Conor's a star in Ireland, man. People just want to see him. The guy, even yesterday at the workout, we saw the reception.
Workouts are fantastic. It's funny, we were leaving today. We were leaving the MGM Grand, actually, to jump in a cab to drive over here. And as I was walking out and getting into a cab, a group of your countrymen was like, John Morgan. I'm like, yeah. They're like, love the podcast, man. It's great. And then instantly just erupted into like these chants and cheers.
Awesome.
And I'm like, these crazy drunken Irishmen, I love them, man. How can you not? And I'm looking forward to it. It sounds like they're trying to pack 10,000 people in for the weigh-ins tomorrow.
Yeah.
Friday it'll be today, this afternoon when it plays. And I definitely wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, with the expo in town, that helps a lot of people.
Of course.
But I think it's going to be a pretty special atmosphere.
You will not have seen anything like it until Saturday. You know, they talk about the Ricky Hatton, and they talk about, you know, the Roy Mayweather fight here in Vegas when Manchester overtook Las Vegas. I'm telling you, I guarantee you now, just from walking around even since Monday, it's just been more and more Irish every second. I seem to see an Irish person at the moment. So, mark my words, Las Vegas will be green on Saturday. It's just going to be crazy.
That's
absolutely
fantastic.
Crazy.
As you said,
I just hope they behave themselves.
Yeah. Well,
behave yourselves better than you did at the World Media Day Scrum, guys, if you're listening in.
They were crazy. You talked about right off the top, it's not the fight that we wanted to see, as you said, the switch, you know, not Jose Aldo, it's Chad Mendes. Now, I think from a hardcore fan perspective, or you know, it's kind of almost even more interesting because this is those questions that we've always wanted to hear answered about it. But give me the Irish perspective. How upset were people? I mean, as you said, no refunds, you know, so I mean, people are still coming, but how upset were people at the switch?
People were very, I think, more disappointed than upset, really, because, you know, I think everyone's grateful that Conor's still taking a fight. It's a big risk, obviously, taking a gun like Chad Mendes, who's such an accomplished wrestler. But, you know, I was getting texts myself, people, do you know anything? Because I was talking to, coincidentally, I'd arranged an interview with Jonas Bellerino on the day the injury broke, so I was speaking with him. Yeah, just coincidentally. So, you know, that was the people who were going, oh, do you know if it's on or off? But once I heard rib injury, I think we knew it was going to be off. So, huge disappointment. It was all over it wouldn't normally be the case. It was all over the mainstream media news in the morning. We were getting phone calls. Obviously, the guy's been involved in the MMA circles in Ireland, the media, you know, asking to go on radio shows. It was crazy. It was on the bulletin after every hour, talking about Conor McGregor's fight. So it was a little bit like Roy Keane in Saipan incident in 2002, where it was that sort of there was sort of a shadow and a cloud cast over the country. But you know, as you said, John, we have this wonderful stylistic match to look forward to on Saturday night. And we're going to get a lot of questions regardless. We're going to see how Conor deals with the wrestling. The reach, see how he deals with that. But not, obviously, trying to let Chad take him down. It's just a fascinating matchup. But I'd like to see Conor go down. I'd like to see him be taken down. See how he reacts, see how he works off his back, see how Chad works, you know, on top of Conor. It's just fascinating. It really is. So it's the questions are going to be answered on Saturday night.
One way or the other.
One way or the other, man.
I know it's sacrilege to say this. What if he loses? Does Conor McGregor's star go away because he loses?
That's the question, but I think it's more in the manner of which he wants to lose, if he is to lose. You know, if it's a short fight in the first minute, I think we've a problem then.
Right.
But, you know, if it goes the distance, I don't think so. I think the Irish people will definitely stand behind him. He's too much of a raiding character. You know, I'm not just saying this, you know, being an Irishman, but I think it would be great to see Conor win. And I think, if, you know, a lot of the media guys feel the same way, because we all want to see that Jose Aldo fight happen because of the promotion, because of, you know, the back and forth, the slagging, you know. And I think for the UFC's sake as well, it's something that really does need to happen, because they spent a lot of money on that fight. And we need someone in the US to sell these pay-per-views. And you know, Conor, because of the way he conducts himself and promotes himself, probably is that man.
He really does. I agree. It's, you know, UFC can't predict the future. And I ended up leaning towards Conor McGregor in this. I've always said I thought Chad and Frankie Edgar were the two guys that I thought could give Conor problems.
Yeah.
But on this short notice, you know, I know that Chad's, you know, always in shape and all those things, but you're not in a five-round fight shape. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is getting ready for a guy like Conor McGregor. I know he says, hey, we've been studying him and just fine-tuning, but I think he's a guy you really want to have full time to prep. Just the way he moves, the timing, the things he does.
Do you think that's a major issue then, the fact that Chad has not a full training camp going into this fight?
I do. That's really one of the biggest reasons I'm leaning the opposite way. Again, I know he stays in shape. I know he'll be good, but I just don't see that he could be ready to go a full 25 minutes. And I think,
I agree.
Again, a guy like Conor McGregor, it's not like, well, we weren't training for Conor, but I've fought three guys just like Conor. No, you haven't. And I think that's going to be an issue. So I'm actually, to make you and your countrymen proud, I actually went on record and picking Conor McGregor. I want to get your insight in seeing him. Obviously, with all that's been going on, you know, everybody's been trying to break down every little thing. You know, Chael Sonnen came out with the report that he had a lot of weight to lose.
Yeah.
Conor says no. There was a lot of – I don't know if you saw – I'm sure you did see, you know, when he and Dana went on ESPN and broke the
news. Yes, yes, yes.
Everybody was kind of reading into, what is Conor's body language? What is that? He doesn't look like Conor right now. And then, of course, there's all these media obligations, all things he's been doing. People are saying he's stretched too thin. So as an Irish fan, as somebody that's been, you know, covering him for so long, give me your take on what you've seen out of him this week. Is there anything you can read as he's sharp, he's tired, he's – give us your insight.
I don't think – you know, it's not – I wouldn't listen to Chael. We know what Chael's like. You know, Chael comes out with some crazy stuff at times. You know, he did maybe an extra long workout yesterday. I think it was one of the longest workouts in his history. Maybe wanted to get a couple of extra pounds off. People are going to read into that a little bit too much. I guarantee you, come Saturday night, Conor's going to – tomorrow night, God, I don't even know what day it is. Still on a jet lag. You know, come weigh-in time on Friday evening, Conor's certainly going to be on championship weight. I've no doubts about it. I thought he was very calm, relaxed yesterday. There's been no real sign of, you know, I'm sure he was going to be annoyed if he's, you know, you're told you're not getting the fight with Jose Aldo after all, you know, the back and forth.
Yes, he was really still processing at that point.
Because I know for a fact he didn't know anything about the fight actually being off till that moment, till that day when Dana said it to him. Mm-hmm. That was the word from Mac Manchin. So, you know, listen, he's going to be upset, but you just have to get on with it. It's one of these things that happens in combat sports, John. But I think people are just reading too much into the lines. Conor will be good. He'd be good to go on Friday, I guarantee.
What do you think about, you know, he's got the famous story now where he says, you know, the coach came in and told me I opened one eye, said they're all the same, and went back to bed. A little bit of bravado there?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was more of a shout from what I've heard. But anyway, listen, you know, you're clearly going to be disappointed. You know, he's just going to say that to try and say it doesn't worry him, but I'm sure he's a little bit angry. But listen, it's not going to affect Conor. Conor's, you know, at the end of the day, he's a thorough professional, you know. Maybe a little bit late for media obligations sometimes. But, you know, as in weight cutting, getting the mind on the job, he's a thorough professional.
Last question on Conor specifically, I guess. The persistent reports of a knee injury that he's been dealing with. It. Anything to those?
Not from what I've heard, but, you know, he looked pretty good to me yesterday throwing those kicks. Didn't look to be in any sort of pain.
Great point.
It was throwing some spinning back kicks. Nah, no problem. I wouldn't read too much into that.
What's your prediction? I mean, I got to think you're rolling with the hometown kid, but I mean, as I know, you're also pretty good at pulling yourself out of situations and really just analyzing it. So when you break this fight down in your head, how do you see it playing out?
You know, I do. I think, as you mentioned, the 3 weeks could be a problem for Chad. I think the range is going to be a big problem. I think Conor, you know, changed that stance. Keep that jab going. Watch out for that left. I just don't know why. In my mind, the way I see this fight going is I see it very similar to the Marcus Brimage fight. I think he's going to throw that uppercut a lot. I think Chad is going to have problems taking Conor down. As I said to you, I'd like to see Conor tested on the ground because I think it answers a lot of the questions. You know, Conor can't wrestle, all that sort of thing. But I do. I see a second round. I think Conor might go to the ground, but I think he's going to be good enough off his back to deal with that early pressure in the first round. But I think we're going to be seeing a TK knockout in the second. I just think the striking could be the massive factor in this fight, and the range I think is absolutely crucial. Look out for that uppercut on that straight left from Conor, as we saw against Marcus Brimage. It's a really interesting fight. It really is. I just think the 3 weeks as well for Chad. Could be a big
everything.
Problem.
I agree. This is a fantastic fight all the way
but
around.
But there's so many ways as well. You can, you know, it can play out.
Listen, if Chad wins the fight, I'm not going to be shocked.
Yeah.
You know, if all of a sudden
yeah.
he does, like, oh, wait, you know, Conor really isn't that good of a wrestler. Yeah. Like, uh-oh. But, you know, the thing is, when I look at Conor, and it's funny because he's had 2-hour-long open workouts in Vegas, plus the open workout. So now I've been a part of 3-hour-long workouts. I feel like I've seen a lot of them. I kind of get that GSP feeling with Conor where it's like, yeah, he didn't grow up wrestling, but he works his body and his
he was very impressive
and
with
his
wrestling.
Balance. You know what I mean? That like now I think he does have good wrestling. Mm. Like, could he enter a collegiate wrestling tournament and win? No, probably not. But as far as what it needs to be for MMA, like, I'm actually kind of impressed with what I see. And I think he might answer some questions. Now, again, Chad might just blast double right through him and put him on his back. But in those workouts that we've seen, now granted that's been with training partners, but I've been kind of impressed with his body control and the way that his wrestling has improved.
I think a big factor as well, people aren't really taking this into consideration. You know, Conor rolls a huge amount with Gunnar Nelson. Gunnar's, you know, an elite level grappler, Henzo Gracie black belt, obviously training under John Kavanaugh and Emalier in Iceland. But when you're training for hours on end in the early hours of the morning, you're on your back and you've a guy like Gunnar Nelson, you know, a big welterweight on top of you like that, you know, who's not to say Conor's not going to win this fight by submission? You know, he's been training with Gunnar for years, and he's been getting better and better and better on the ground.
Wouldn't that be
great to see. But you know, people are possibly getting a little bit carried away with the wrestling. I'm sure Conor doesn't want to go to the ground, obviously, because you know, his strength is a stand up. But you know, you have to take into consideration who Conor's working with as well. Guys like the caliber of Gunnar Nelson.
Yeah.
Grapplers like that.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's so fun. I can't wait.
It's
Saturday
awesome.
Night, cannot get here soon enough. Last thing I really have for you. Conor went out of his way again at the press conference to say he wants to fight on that October 24th show in Dublin. I've gone on record. I don't think he ever fights in that building again. God bless him. I know he's saying, and I appreciate what he's saying for his countrymen. I think that's great. But do you agree with me? He's never fighting in that building again.
I'd be surprised if he's even fighting in Ireland in the next couple of years. I don't think we're even going to get the stadium show. I think people are, people don't really understand the logistic problems to both outdoor stadiums in Ireland. I'd say more likely it could be Cardiff and Wales, which we will travel to. But, he's not going to fight in that October 24 card, no way. You know, I think win, lose or draw, we won't be seeing Conor McGregor on that card. I'd like to see... You know, hopefully, maybe if Neil gets a win tomorrow night, and you know, Neil co-main or main, and you know, maybe have a number one contender flyweight title. Like Neil Siri's not too far away. I think he's you know, if he wins against Lewis Smolka, he's on one of the longest records outside DJ unbeaten streaks in the flyweight division.
And right now, it's a division that desperately needs contenders.
Yeah.
So I don't think it takes a lot. I mean, fresh names are
exactly.
Good.
We've seen two guys ranked eighth get title shots. That sort of proves it. But no, I can't see Conor John. Fighting in Dublin, it's just not going to happen. Conor's a pay-per-view fighter now in the US, and I think people are going to have to keep saving and coming out to these events, because I think that's the only way they're going to get to see Conor.
No doubt. Well, brother, I appreciate it, man. We've still got the fights going on in front of us. Erica Diversio and Ayaka Hamasaki are fighting. We still got two title fights left on the card. I saw Fabricio Verdum snuck in over here. Henzo Gracie's over there. Ali Abdelaziz is right
Ioana.
There next to him. I mean, it's just an all-star roster of people in here. First time I've been in this venue, even
it's
though
awesome.
I live here, this is fantastic. I would love to see more fights here. I would love to see maybe some tough finales. something like that for the UFC. Cool. I think this is a beautiful place.
It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah, absolutely love it. I wouldn't mind to be staying here as well. The Cosmopolitan, good,
not bad,
good old spot, man. Nice little bar in there. We like a drink, us Irish boys. But no, thanks for having me, John. Really appreciate
it. Got it, man. Obviously, Talking Brawls, MMA.com. Anything else you want to plug?
No, just like just tune into the fights on Saturday if you haven't already.
I love it. And I guess I'll see you in Scotland as well.
San Diego.
Oh, you're doing
I'm San Diego.
Right.
I have another one of the guys
going
over to
in California, and I'll be in Scotland.
To Glasgow for me, yes. So, listen, you guys get enough good weather. Enjoy the rain in Glasgow. You'll see enough Irish there as well. There's plenty of us there.
Awesome, man. Well, we'll watch the rest of the fights and wrap up this night and go have a couple of cold beers. Sound good?
Definitely, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, brother.
Cheers, man.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. I'm proud to bring in my man Cole Coffey at this point, because up to this point we've been dealing with Europeans, and they're fine folks. Simon Head is still here with us right now. Fine folks. I believe Nall's around here somewhere, isn't he? He's great as well. Let me set the stage here for you. Invicta is now over.
It is.
Normally we record this thing on Thursday night. It's now Friday morning.
Yeah.
We're going to still get this thing out on Friday morning, because that's how we do. That's our commitment. That's what we do. But we are sitting inside Hooters, the Hooters Casino, right next to MGM Grand in Las Vegas. And we're here for a special reason, because I think to any journalist, and Cole Coffey, you might not necessarily know this, but to any up-and-coming MMA journalist that's trying to cut their teeth in this business, they have stayed here in this hotel.
Yeah.
Without question, because it's the cheapest place you can find in town, no doubt about it. And let me just say, there is a reason for that. But it is the cheapest place you can find in town. And it's right next to the MGM Grand, the Grand Garden Arena, the hotel and casino. And so basically the Irish media that's in town has set up shop here at Hooters. And so we finished with Invicta earlier tonight, and I said, let's go over there. Let's grab some beers with these crazy Irishmen, and let's finish up the podcast.
You know, it's crazy, and I don't know what it is with Irishmen and finding cheap beers and cheap food. You know, they have a knack for it, and I think they definitely found it. I mean, no, it's been interesting. We met some really cool people. Met that this drunk Hooters chick earlier. That was pretty fun, and happened to be somewhat of an expert on MMA. It was pretty interesting, and just goes to show you never know what you're going to find.
We did. We had a nice conversation. Our own Ben Folks was here. He ducked out a little bit early.
Yeah.
He's still on Montana time. He's not used to being on the road. He would be the opposite of the MMA Road Show. He is the MMA Stay at Home in Montana show, and don't get out very often. So he was ready to pack it in and call it a night. The fact that he has a couple of small kids at home and he could kind of get out a little bit, enjoy Vegas, that's just not the Ben Folks thing. So he left. Drunk Hooters girl / MMA expert also left us as well.
Yeah.
I was hoping we could get her to jump on the podcast. She had some pretty interesting stories.
She had an awesome accent.
She did have an awesome, very awesome Southern accent, which I don't know. I think she might have been putting that on.
I don't know. I took her for face value. I don't mean, but you never know. Maybe it was fake. I don't know. She was something.
Well, it's been a busy week. International Fight Week. We have certainly been very, very busy. You have been even busier. You've been moonlighting a little bit as well, as you have done previously before. You're working with Invicta FC this week. So in addition to your MMA junkie duties, you've been doing that. So extremely, extremely busy week. We've still got a lot to go. The expo actually kicks off tomorrow. We got all kinds of stuff to film there. The weigh-ins are going to be amazing. It sounds like there's going to be some 10,000 people at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, which will be absolutely amazing to see. A lot of them are going to be Irish. We know that. We've seen them all around all week. And then, of course, we got the fights. Then, of course, we got fights on Sunday night, and then you're going to San Diego. I'm going to Scotland. Just a lot of stuff going on. But let's talk about what we've seen so far this week. Just kind of wanted to go back a little bit before we get to tonight. The open workouts was kind of the first big event that we had of the week. You were filming Conor McGregor's hour-long workout because, let's be honest, the story of this week is Conor McGregor. You know, you filmed a lot of open workouts, both in working for Junkie and your time with USC. Definitely one of the loudest crowds, the busiest open workouts we've ever seen, and Conor, of course, put on a show. Just give me your impression of that day and kind of what you saw but behind the camera lens.
Yeah, in fact, it was one of the first times I've ever seen a line outside where they actually had a cutoff, where there were more fans wanting to get in that actually couldn't get in until somebody left. And that was pretty amazing. That's the first time I've ever seen something like that. But, yeah, they were loud, they were cheering, but they were also respectful. But it was fun because gave Chad, of course, some booze and whatnot, but still they, you know, they quieted down at the right parts, you know, when people were interviewing and other stuff. I mean, they were respectful. It was the same thing with, like, the open workout, or I'm sorry, the press conference that happened earlier. Whereas the last time that the huge Irish contingency was here, you know, they pretty much ran the thing because you couldn't go forward because they were just cheering. But at this point, you know, they did their cheering, but then they also quieted down and let things happen or whatever. I mean, but it was unique to see. I mean, it's been amazing. But, I mean, the open workout I thought was great. I mean, I think anytime you see that many diehard fans that are willing to, one, put their hard-earned money and let alone their time to fly halfway across the world, you know, to see something is amazing. And it's been fun to see them here and just to be in the middle of the fight week.
It really has. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere both at the weigh-ins and on the fights as well. One thing you did see, we talked about it briefly. I didn't get to see this, but I was kind of interested in it. The open workouts was the first day that everybody was really all in their brand new Reebok gear. This was everybody had to wear their Reebok or their UFC gear. You got to see a little behind the scenes peek with Robbie Lawler, because Robbie Lawler wound up coming in with wrestling shoes, and he had Adidas wrestling shoes, which I don't think Reebok makes any wrestling shoes. So this is probably something that they're going to have to address really quick, because as far as I know, I don't think they have that in their line. Maybe they do, and I'm just not sure. But he showed up with Adidas wrestling shoes on, and you saw a little scramble behind the scenes where basically they had to cover up these Adidas logos.
Yes, there was the mad dash. Everybody was running around with their heads, you know, cut off like a chicken, you know, like searching, just looking. And at one point I just finally asked, you know, one of the security officials, you know, like, what's going on? They're like, oh, we need gaff tape. Like, why do you need gaff tape, you know? And lo and behold, there it was that they wanted to cover up his logos on his shoes. They were that worried about it getting out there. I mean, I think you've talked a little bit about the necessities of part of the deal and what's not allowed to be shown in any TV things or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting and crazy to see how serious they took it, but how much of a big deal it was that just to cover up some little logo that probably for most parts – definitely wouldn't have been seen by the fans. They were too
far
away.
Nobody would have noticed.
But, you know, even the media, I'd be a little hard-pressed to think that they would have even seen it. But, you know, because I noticed then I couldn't stop looking at it. So as he's doing his workout, I'm noticing the tape come off. I'm thinking Reed Harris is going to jump up there and, like, start slapping on new tape or something, you know. But it was interesting. But I guess that's part of the deal, and I guess we're going to see a lot more of that, you know. I mean, this generic vanilla, you know, unless it's like a Reebok.
That's it, man. I'm with you. I don't think anybody would notice, to be honest with you, but I totally understand, too. I mean, this is week one of the deal, this massive multi-year deal. The last thing you want to do is screw up something right away and upset your brand-new partner. So definitely can't do that. That brought us to today. The big day was today. Technically yesterday as we're recording this. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning. We got a nice cold pitcher of Coors Light. We had a couple of fireball shots just to help fuel the podcast a little bit.
Trying, because, man, you're right, man. This day is, it's beating you down. I'm tired. This has been a long one, and we got more days to go.
And then straight to San Diego and straight to Scotland for me. Yeah. The press conference, you touched on a little bit earlier. Very cool setup inside the Ka Theater, which is a massive Cirque du Soleil theater. I thought they did a great job of setting that up, a very cool venue. The Irish showed up in force. Pretty much what we expected. It was the Conor and Chad Mendes show. That's where all the questions were directed. Dana was supposed to be there to handle the press conference at the last minute. He didn't. Dave Schaller handled it as well. Not a ton of stories, I didn't think, so much coming out of the press conference, but what I did find interesting was the fact that they did not do the traditional face-offs that they typically do at the end of the press conferences. And tried to ask around a little bit and kind of find out why that was. I got some varying answers. You know, the one thing that I've heard is and that was cited is that the only people that are technically allowed to do face-offs anymore are Dana and the matchmakers. Obviously, that all stems back to the Jon Jones Daniel Cormier incident, some other things that happened right around there. I think they just decided, listen, we only want our top execs in there. But I also heard that the UFC made a conscious decision, and by the USC, I would assume that means Dana, especially as a promoter, that, hey, listen, let's not do that face-off. Let's save that face-off for the weigh-ins on Friday. Let's not do it at the press conference the way they normally do. So I got to admit, I was a little bit disappointed because typically we put that video up and you start to decide. I mean, I think everybody's really excited to see what the size disparity is between the two when they get together. Is Conor McGregor in Chad Mendes' head? Does Chad act a little different than he normally does? I think people really want to see all that, and we didn't get a chance to see it at the press conference. But on the other hand, now the fan side of me, I guess, or just you know, the person that follows the sport, like, I can't wait to see him face off at the weigh-ins now because we haven't got a chance to see it yet. This is such a weird occasion where we literally have not seen these two guys come face-to-face, and we're not going to see it until on the scale. So I don't know. Were you disappointed that it happened? What did you think when it kind of went down like that?
I was a little disappointed, but I also wasn't shocked by it because even at my time before I left, and you're right, it kind of got to a point where if it wasn't Dana or one of the guys or somebody that was either to some level of respect that they thought that the guys wouldn't mess with them, like nobody's going to cause a ruckus, you know, if Dana's up there, you know, and if Dana is up there, Dana's going to push his hand. He's strong enough he could push it back. And really, is Conor really going to go that beyond that part? If, you know, when you saw the part where he took the belt from Aldo and it looked like they're going to go. Dana's pushing it, but, you know, he doesn't look like he's straining. He doesn't look like he's whatever. They realize, hey, there's a point that I can't go past. This is boss man or whatever. But I'll also tell you, when Dana's up there, he controls a certain level of degree, even when it comes to security. Because I know when things have happened in the past and fighters start getting going and security has went in there, I know for a fact Dana's went after that and be like, hey, guys, don't fucking run up there. Don't grab them. You're making it look like they're a bunch of fucking animals up there that can't control themselves. I'll handle it. And when I need your help, I'll say something. I'll do something. So pretty much now he's kind of got these guys almost like,
stay away.
Stay away. You know, so
let the drama unfold.
Let it either happen and he'll take care of it or whatever. But I think they also just kind of drew a line like, that needs to be Dana's decision. That needs to be Dana that makes that call. And if it's not Dane up there or somebody that's willing to be like, hey, guys, whatever, don't do it. It's just a risk that, you know, it does no good, you know. We saw it, but it all stems from the Cormier and Jones incident.
Yeah, and I completely
agree. Situation that could have happened.
I completely agree with you in that situation that I still contend to this day. I don't think John Jones would have thrown the punch over Dana. And that's not
– right.
That's no slight to Dave Schaller. That, like, I mean, Dave and I go way back to the WEC days. I have a lot of respect for Dave. We've worked together for several years now. And I'm not saying it's anything. I just think it's a simple fact that it's Dana. Not that Dave wasn't doing something physically properly or that he wasn't in the right position or that he wasn't this. I just think that John Jones – had he seen that's Dana White right there, he's not going to throw a punch over Dana White to hit Daniel Cormier. And so I think that's why they have the idea now. It's just going to be Dana or the matchmakers and nobody else. I don't know that rule is always going to be adhered to 100%, but and I don't know if that was the case today, but it is something interesting to note. So if you ever wonder, you know, why face-offs are or aren't happening,
yeah,
that might be part of it. After that was over, I had 30 interviews to do. It was a crazy day. It was a very long day, but we got a lot of good video content that we'll have released on MMA Junkie right away, as well as some things that we've banked that'll be coming up days to come. Just 'cause it takes a while to produce this because there was video for both the Ultimate Fighter 21 finale and UFC 189, as well as interview opportunities with people that are just in town for the expo. You, on the other hand, got to go to a pool party. And you went and filmed at a pool party. Now, from what I understand, it was not the greatest of circumstances. I haven't seen any of the Raw video yet. We'll definitely have it coming out later this week. I know the Octagon girls were there. I know that you didn't exactly get to, like, set up shop at a table or anything like that. But you were outside hanging out with the Octagon girls at a pool party.
We are actually outside of the pool and outside of the party. It's where they have, like, this red carpet thing. So, unfortunately, you know, I'm sure underneath their nice shorts and their whatever thing, they had the bikinis that we're all hoping to see. But no, it was more like hanging out with the Octagon girls, but we weren't inside the pool. So it wasn't like, hey, here's bikini Octagon girls, you know. So we got a little let down, you know. I mean, we felt like we were like the, you know, the neighbor kid down the street that nobody really wants to hang out with, but they let him hang out in the front porch. We got to hang out in front of the pool party, you know. You know, they're like, oh, hey, yeah, you can come report or whatever. But
not exactly,
I mean,
the assignment
good.
You were hoping for.
No, it wasn't. But it was interesting because we did get to see a lot of guys that came through. We didn't interview them all, but we saw Tyron Woodley was there, Dustin Poirier, Luke Rockhold, Rashad Evans, who we did actually talk to because now Rashad's back on the books, has a fight coming up. We got a little update from him, so stay tuned for that interview. Saw Johnny Hendricks, which was funny because the last time we saw Johnny there, last time, had his shirt off and was kind of feeling self-conscious, was feeling a little heavy, and a lot of people gave him shit about it, and he was even giving himself shit about it. So the first thing I kind of started talking about was like, hey, I see you this year, you know. You're looking pretty fit, you know. Was it because you knew this pool party's coming up or whatever, you know? But he just talked about how, you know, he doesn't get out of get out of shape like he used to. You know, takes it all a bit differently. So it was good touching base with him. And I just remembered I wanted to get an interview with Stipe, and I didn't get a chance to get an interview with Stipe. They were pretty strict about we wanted to kind of get all these interviews out front. But then, of course, you know, there's people inside the pool party that wanted to see the people. But then there was also the participants wanting to get to the pool. So the last thing I want to do is sit out front and wait for all the media to go down the line and interview everybody. So they started taking guys inside, and then they were going to bring him outside. And he was one of the ones they said they were going to bring back out, and they never did, and I completely spaced on it until right now.
That's just so much going on.
There's so much
going
on.
Really
it's just
is.
Like, I can only imagine what else we'll find out later on that kind of slipped through the cracks. But
there really is so much going on. It gets bigger and bigger every year. I think for a fan coming out here during International Fight Week, if you are a UFC fan, and you're thinking about coming out, I can see how some people would be disappointed they didn't get the fight they wanted to see with Jose Aldo. But, I mean, there's just so much other stuff going on, man. There's so many different things going on. Matt Erickson went to Legacy Stadium over at the Venetian tonight. Well, I guess it's actually at Palazzo, but, you know, same connected properties, where they were having a cooking competition with Luke Rockhold and CM Punk and a couple other U.S. I mean, there's just so many things going on, you know, and I think it's a good time. I think if people have ever thought about coming out to Vegas, International Fight Week is a great time to do it. After the pool party, because this is the longest day ever, then it was time for you to go do Invicta. I was there as well. First time I've ever been inside that venue, inside the Cosmopolitan. Beautiful venue. Yeah. Invicta did great. I'd love to see some tough finales there, maybe in the future, something like that, smaller cards. But I guess you were backstage actually talking to all the winners, so you didn't necessarily get to see all the fights live. I'm sure you were watching on a monitor. But you were backstage. What were your impressions? I know that you've worked for Invicta a couple of different times now. I think this was probably the first time you've worked a Cyborg fight.
It was the first time.
And certainly, just like Conor McGregor is the featured attraction of the UFC, Cyborg is unquestionably the highest profile female fighter on the Invicta roster, and certainly one of the highest profile in the sport. Did you have any interactions with her? Did you see anything? Help me understand what was going on backstage.
Well, she definitely it's interesting because, one, she travels pretty deep. There was a huge, what I considered, contingency of trainers and stuff, you know, like striking coaches, all these different guys, you know. But it was the space was kind of small, so they had two rooms where all these fighters are crammed in, all their camps. They're decent-sized rooms, but, you know, they definitely the theater didn't have all the established areas where you could really space out. So it was kind of unique and probably not the best situation for a lot of the fighters. But it is what it is. You know, you do with what you got. But, you know, Cyborg just – it was interesting really seeing her because 30, 40 minutes or even maybe a little bit beyond that, before she even fights, she's starting getting active, really warming up, getting vocal. You know, at some point I had heard that when she's getting nearer to fight time, she'll start singing and chanting. And next thing you know, you start hearing all this chanting and yelling. And then it became like her yelling as she's pumping herself up. And then the fight camp would sort of do this call and response yell or whatever. And it was amazing because, I mean, it started and it just kept getting more intense as time went on and as it got closer to the fight. But it was the first time I'd seen something like that, whether even to that degree, even in men's MMA or with the UFC. Like, you've seen some fighters get really into it and pumped up, but just the level of, like, this routine, it just became this huge sort of ordeal of, like, this chanting and singing and dancing inside the one thing, and then the prancing, the moving around in the hallway and just sort of getting herself pumped up. And then eventually it started getting so big they found another little bit of space where she could get even more into it. it was unique. It was really, really neat to see. And, you know, definitely climax, obviously, when she got out into the ring, because obviously she got herself so pumped up that by the time she went out there, it was
45 seconds is all she needed.
Yeah, it was amazing, but it was neat. I really respect what Invicta does. I like what they do, and it's a great bunch of individuals. So anytime I can help out with them, I'm always happy to see. So it was a nice treat for me to actually see Cyborg in action, and you know, because you've heard it and you always see it, you know, it's a but it's really neat to see it up close and see everything that goes with it, you know, and because it's hard to kind of fathom that there were three title fights on this card tonight. But, you know, it's hard to when it's so overshadowed by Cyborg and how much that she brings to it, you know. But I thought still the other title fights were incredible. I thought there were some other great fights. It was a good night of martial arts, not just women's martial arts, you know, mixed martial arts. It was a good night of mixed martial arts. It really was.
And I will say this, though, as fantastic as the action in the cage was, I may say that was the worst post-fight press conference ever.
Oh, that was it's a work in progress in certain things. And, I mean, yeah, there's certain things that need to happen. I mean, unfortunately, yeah, in this post-presser, of course, they had plenty of mics up on the stand, you know, for the fighters, but not a one around for the media. So everybody's just yelling out their questions or, like, and it just – it brought down the level of the night for me personally, but I mean, hey, it is what it is.
I don't even mean to hit on that. I mean, that's an operational thing that they need to figure out, and I'm sure they'll get it done. I'm sure they probably had to realize it too. Certainly, it's still very much a growing organization. But for me, yes, the microphones were an issue, and I think that needs to be corrected. But for me, what the hell was the guy that was calling Cyborg sexy, and I just telling her. That was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. And I don't know who the guy was. I couldn't really see him. It did seem like he was wearing a nice suit. I was able to kind of make that out from my position. I'm not sure who he was. And I mean, listen, if anybody knows who this guy is, I'm not trying to just pick on the guy, but it just seemed ridiculously inappropriate. The line of questioning was weird to begin with, but then to just say, "You're a sexy Cyborg. If nobody told you today, you look good at 145. It was just bizarre.
It was bizarre, and it was disrespectful to the maybe. I mean, to Chris herself, but also just to the spirit of what was going on there. We're here at a press conference. Like, come on, you know, if you're there as media or if you're trying to do whatever, you know, like, relax. I mean, I'm glad you got to enjoy a few drinks before there, but you know, don't. Don't ruin the whole rest of the press conference, because it got to a point where it looked like Chris was a little uneasy and a little like awkward about it.
Right.
But then Shannon as well. And it's like, come on, again, now you're just being whatever. But yeah, it made me think that if it was like how the UFC did their things, the guy would have to stand up, say his name and say who he works for. And then maybe they then could address it. But yeah, I thought it was a little bit inappropriate and not out of line, but just like, you know, just like, come on, man. There was a better moment you could have joked about it.
It was pretty ridiculous. I was kind of embarrassed and awkward. And at first I thought maybe it was just a joke. Maybe it was just somebody playing around, having a good time or whatever. And maybe it was like a friend or somebody. But it became very evident that like it wasn't a friend. It wasn't somebody she knew. And just bizarre. I think that'll be archived eventually on UFC Fight Pass. I believe it's streamed live. I think they're going to work on archiving it. So if you're looking for some bizarre MMA to watch, that might be something worth checking out, the post Invicta SC13 press conference, because it was a little bit weird. I was uncomfortable.
It was weird.
It was. Well, listen, it's late. We got a lot to do. It's still going to be a busy, busy weekend. We're going to have a lot going on. The show next week, we'll figure that out. Probably be bringing some stuff from Scotland. We'll probably be getting some stories from you from San Diego. But I think right now, unless you've got something to say, we should probably just call it a night, get this thing posted, and try to get some sleep, because we've got three more long days of MMA action, which I'm really looking forward to. But bottom line is, even for road warriors like ourselves, we got to get some sleep.
It's rough. This is rough. And I would say if there was anything, probably – I know we talked about you know, the new emerging technologies and do whatnot. You know, we had initially planned on doing a Periscope of this. But when it came down to it, and we apologize – I'm just so fucking tired. I'm just like, I don't even want to deal with it right now. Last thing I want to do is like put a camera in front of my face and show these ginormous bags underneath my eyes.
Oh, yeah. We're both half asleep. You wouldn't want to see that.
Yeah, I'm just like, eh, we'll do it next time. And I think that's something that I think we look forward to doing and including all that. But when it came down to it today, it was just like, let's do this. Let's knock this out. And we'll work on that where we can properly plan. And I think I need to do a little more testing with it. I ran into some issues with my phone next time, but it was great. I think it's a great idea and a great way to go. And
it is cool.
You know, it'd be something fun to play with, you know. So we'll see. So, but no, I would say, hey, please again, do all the normal things we like to beg for you at the end. You know, subscribe to the iTunes, leave reviews, you know, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter, the MMA Roadshow, or you can find MMA Junkie John on there, or you can find Ken S. Hathaway or The Cold Coffee. It doesn't matter. But, yeah, review. Send us some love letters. Send us some hate. Hey, it's all right. You know, we'll take it all. But we won't take it well, but you will still take it.
We'd appreciate the positive way more than the negative.
Yes, we like the positive.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, man. So, well, we're going to wrap things up then, and we'll get this thing posted online ASAP so we can actually get some sleep, and then we'll just kick it all off again tomorrow. So, as Kenny said, follow us on all those things. Otherwise, thanks for listening.